The problem with feedback loops is that they can lapse into being, I don't know, it's a positive feedback loop, and it just oscillates madly out of control until everything flies apart.
Completely. Yeah. And I think this is to go back to Marshall McLuhan, who argued famously in the 1960s that forget about the content of the medium, it's the essence of the medium itself which often creates the most changes. In other words, the very fact of having the medium around is the thing which often makes the bigger difference. In other words, you know, when the book emerged, we all began to read in private by candlelight. That changed us in some ways, much much more importantly than the specific books that we were reading. In the same way, I think, the kind of flame wars that we get into on the internet, the kind of disgruntlement and that goes back and forth between emails even that we're sending, is because sometimes we find it difficult to exit that kind of feedback loop. So instead of saying, let's have a conversation about this, we're batting things back and forth, and that can often spiral into conflict. And it's partly our frustration, I think, at being in this place where we're sending messages back and forth.
There's a direct real-world application of this, because you point out some military disasters have been as a result of too much information. Paul Van Ripper.
Mm.
And I'd heard this story sort of passed around at the time, and efforts were made to hush it up, because this is the guy who, in a military exercise, kicked the United States butt pretty much single-handedly.
Absolutely. What he did was, he was playing this massive, massive, incredibly well-funded war game, running to hundreds of millions of dollars, just before the Iraq War. And there were two different teams, and Van Ripper, because he was a maverick, was usually asked to play the enemy, you know, the kind of Saddam Hussein or the North Korea. What he did was, his strategy, because he could see that the opposition had all this high-tech equipment, and the whole point of the war game was to vindicate the idea of network-centric warfare, to show that it worked. What he decided to do was to kind of disrupt the whole thing by playing a completely different strategy, and his strategy was to turn off the mobile phones of the soldiers, to turn off the kind of various microwave electronic equipment that they had, to use only motorcycle couriers to pass messages back and forth.
Which hasn't really been used since, I believe, the First World War, right, on a consistent basis?
No, it hasn't, but it was used after that by Hezbollah in 2006 and Lebanon to great effect. And one way of looking at the war game that Van Ripper won, because he eventually did win it by simply turning up with a very small flotilla of ships and blowing everyone to smithereens uninvited. One way of looking at that was that if the Americans had actually paid proper response to his victory, they just simply tried to fiddle the figures. It happened again in a war game in 2004, exactly the same thing. If they paid proper attention, it might have saved some lives in Iraq. Just as importantly, it might have advised the Israelis that if they were going to prosecute a war in 2006 against Hezbollah, it would be the wrong thing to do to rely too heavily on high-tech equipment and so-called smart soldiers who were existing on this electronic information loop where they would be incredibly dynamic and smart. In the end, they all got lost, these soldiers, and they weren't quite sure where they were headed.
Marshall McLuhan, our Canadian culture hero, is he now just sort of on a dead-end street in Siberia, or is he still relevant?
I think he's hugely relevant, and my book was partly inspired by his ideas. And one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book so much was because, I don't know whether you've had this in Canada, but you know, around about the time that all of these new social networking sites came along, like Second Life and Facebook, you know, us journalists were having to write these incredibly colourful stories about the 2 weeks that we spent on Facebook, or you know, the time we spent on the beach with the dancing girls in Second Life. Deeply dull places to be often, especially as a journalist, simply biding your time for an article to write. But the point was, we'd invested these places with the most garish, colourful metaphors, you know, the information superhighway, the beach on Second Life. And what I learned from Marshall McLuhan was that, you know, forget about the content. What's much more interesting is the medium. What's much more interesting than all of those places is people sitting in the spare room pressing buttons and responding to feedback and what that does to them. So I learned a lot from Marshall McLuhan about the importance of the medium over the message. The problem, as I see it, is that once again, ideas like McLuhan's have almost become a self-fulfilling prophecy, or at least they've reached their reductio ad absurdum. We've arrived in a kind of society where the medium or a focus on the medium has so far overwhelmed the message that there is no message left. So we Twitter with no reason to Twitter, absolutely nothing to say, but we're so impressed by this shiny new medium that we think that, you know, it must be able to do something.
That's a fascinating book. Well done.
Thanks very much.
The book is Lost in Cyberbia, How Life on the Net Has Created a Life of Its Own. I've been speaking with the author, James Harkin, and Lost in Cyberbia, published by Canopy Canada.